Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is certified therapeutic harp practitioner, Jane DeMakos. DeMakos provides therapeutic harp and voice in healthcare facilities in the New York region, including hospice care and palliative services of Tompkins and Cortland counties. She is a candidate for certification in thanatology, which is a scientific study of death and the practices associated with it. She has released two CDs and is on the part-time faculty at Ithaca College's School of Music. And welcome.
Thank you, Tish.
It's nice to finally meet you.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I want to know if there's anything in particular that got you interested in harp.
Well, actually, the thanatology piece is really it. And because it's not something that people know about, it's actually music thanatology. There is a field of thanatology you do study, and it is music for the dying. And that was my first opening of a doorway was into music thanatology in maybe early 2000. And I've been pretty much pursuing it ever since. It's really at the bottom for me. That whole model of using music for people at end of life is core practice for me.
Wow. But you've been a musician probably most of your life,
yes.
Right? So were you looking for something to fit in, the interest in death and dying?
It wasn't
just like being a therapist? Or
no, it was. I stumbled upon a DVD that profiled the work of the pioneer of music thanatology, and I just happened upon it in a local bookstore. I thought, oh, that looks interesting. I saw the harp on the cover, music and dying in the same sentence.
Wow.
You know, and I'm like, wow, that looks interesting. And that was when you could rent out, you know, VHS, you know. It was actually a VHS.
Yes, I remember those. Yep.
And, you know, I just watched it, and I just, it was like an epiphany, you know, to use music in this way, this really intimate
And soothing.
Soothing and very intentional but they actually use this word prescriptively.
Mm.
So it's very nuanced. It's not just nice music, which is okay. We like nice music, but it's actually called prescriptive music, where you're musically addressing unfolding patient
health
needs
problems.
As they arise moment to moment.
Wow. But you must have started in the harp before you...
No.
You didn't?
Nope, no.
Not at all?
I saw this film. I applied for the program. It was in Montana. You had to move to Montana at the time. It was a graduate type of program that offered certification. It was immersion. It was intense. It was clinical. It was academic. It was musical. It was philosophical. It was just, she brought in all these things. And it was one of those things you die trying to complete, practically, you know. And I decided not to go. I didn't want to move at that point. My circumstances were such. But I did buy I bought the harp that they all use, their left-shouldered harps, which is not how harps are played in modern harp playing.
The reason for that?
I believe it's twofold. The harp is over your heart.
Ah.
So there's a lot of very particular things in this field, and as put forth by the person who founded this field. And then when, as a musician and as a pianist who plays piano, when you play, your right hand plays the treble clef and your left hand plays the bass clef. When you play left-shouldered harp, your left hand plays the treble clef and then vice versa. And it was so disorienting. And I never actually reoriented back.
Wow.
In a way. And the beauty of that is when you are playing for people who are dying, especially people who are at the end of their life, we call this a liminal place that people are at. They're not grounded. They're not in their formal ego sense. The identity is been dissolving. And we know that in any kind of ritual or rites of passage, you know, the familiar is taken away.
Right.
And that place before you become familiarized with the newness is called liminal. And in this program, we study ritual. We study these stages. And so to be able to go in musically and be disarmed, disoriented, and learn a skill in that state, it is really an amazing thing. And that really what it's been like for me being a left-shouldered harpist.
Wow.
I do not play piano and harp, I believe, with the same parts of my brain.
That is really fascinating. What a discipline you actually had to learn.
Yeah, it took a long time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk specifically about therapeutic harp because, you know, when I've mentioned it to a lot of people, they've heard of you, but they say, what is that?
Yeah.
So tell us how it evolved. Did you come up with it?
No. It's a field. I'm certified therapeutic harpist. There's a national standards board of therapeutic musician, and there are programs that are recognized by this standards board. And I'm trained as a certified therapeutic harpist, and it's a bit of a sister or cousin to music thanatology.
Yeah, I would assume.
So music thanatology is prescriptive music, especially for end-of-life care, palliative care, and hospice care. Therapeutic music, it has a broader spectrum. Yeah. It doesn't have perhaps as much nuance as music thanatology does, because music thanatology is so specialized, really works with physiology, emotional unfoldment, psychological, mm-hmm. mental, and spiritual too, although that's a controversial word for some. So music therapy works with all of those things, mm-hmm. but perhaps a broader way.
So how do you tie in with these people who need therapeutic harp?
Right.
You know, do people call you individually?
Well, I'm employed with hospicare.
Right.
And that is the way I am tied in. I am on the clinical team. I'm employed there just like the nurses and social workers, chaplaincy, you know.
So you started out, you know, employed by them, right?
I've been employed
as a freelancer going.
No, I've been employed since 2005. I was hired in 2005 to start a music program. They did not have one, and that was, you know, the vision and innovation of the current director of hospice care, Nina Miller. A grant just appeared. It was small, and it was a person who knew about my work, friends with Nina, suggested that Nina call me, and we just. We set out. It was like an immediate birthing.
Wow.
And it was small and wonderful. And, you know, the continuing directors have grown the program, you know, so that it's an mm-hmm. established program. And I would say the clinical staff really recognize that I'm a part of the team. I go to all the IDG meetings, which are mm-hmm. interdisciplinary group meetings, which discuss all the patients. They're long. You know, you just stay there and discuss them and work out everything you need to, that reporting everything. You know, the medical director is there, and I'm part of that meeting. And so if I get a referral, sometimes I get them, you know, I'll get an email or a phone call, or sometimes it comes up in the meeting, this person would benefit, this person is having anxiety, mm-hmm. or the family could use a way to come together, and music could be a way. There's so many uses of using music to serve patients and their families and loved ones.
I can imagine. Yeah. And one of the major things is probably making people comfortable.
Yes, that's.
Because this is a new stage in life that no one has to experience usually twice. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. Well, sometimes people get better, and you know, rarer thing, but people do. But yeah, right. It's like, yeah, you die once, and we want to make it, you know, really more than comfortable. Comfortable, yes. But music is a way to remember deep humanity. So if we manage someone's pain, that also gives people an opportunity to have quality of life. Because if someone is overcome with pain, that's all that they can have. So if you manage pain, then people then can maybe experience their relationships or, you know, and then there's psychological and emotional pain if people have conflict or unresolved issues, and to work to resolve those. Music can do both. Music can work with both, and doesn't work alone, works in collaboration with mainstream medicine. So it's not like music can take away pain.
Oh,
music
yeah.
can address, you know, certain things that help soften around pain, and then it also works really well with pharmaceuticals to help them, because music works on the nervous system, so it can really expedite some pharmaceuticals, you know. And
that's
really,
amazing,
yeah.
you know, the
yeah.
progress
yeah.
people have made
yeah.
in regard to what affects us.
Right. And then one of my things that I really like to muse upon is beauty medicine, just that, not you know, we're not to always reduce music to working with the biochemical issues,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
Like we're gonna go fix something, but is it just medicine to remember and have beauty in your presence, and does music do that? And is that a kind of a medicine, you know? And that's, I always keep that in the background, you
oh,
know?
Yeah, I'll bet you do. I was wondering, Do you play music live for most people?
It's always live.
It's never recorded.
No.
I mean, people can't say, I'd like a copy of your... Yeah.
Well, we do have a CD, and
right.
and it's a beautiful CD, but it has to be live because it's prescriptive.
Ah.
And if there's no way you can meet the changing needs of a person with recorded music. And
that makes sense. Yeah.
You know, the CD is actually a collaboration between Hospicari and Ithaca College and some local musicians. Samite is actually on the CD, some beautiful Lizzie Simkin and Nicholas Walker.
So you really have to collaborate with the patient and the medical team.
We say that the patient, in collaborating with the team for sure, the clinical team, but in being at the bedside, the patient in a sense is the director of the music, is the conductor. We're following the patient. We're not imposing or intruding or manipulating. You know, it's really following the patient. And then a lot of times what we find is that, so if I'm working with a patient's respiration, that's one of the key things that we do is sync and entrain with respiration. There is this, over a period of time, kind of syncing and entrainment. The patient, I don't like to use the word patient too much, the person can begin to go through changes. So there can be a relaxation response, and then the respiration can begin to change. And then I change.
Ah, you see how that is? That's really interesting, yeah.
You know, so that we work with that. And there's also things like working with family. Like, say you have someone who's afraid to go into the room because they are afraid of death. They haven't really had to really experience it that much, and their loved one is dying, you know.
Well, and that must happen often.
Right? A lot of things happen often. There's just like the variety and amount of things that happen, you know, because everyone's both the same and we're unique. So it's like some combination of those things. But, you know, say someone really can't face this thing. Sometimes I'll play in another room, you know, just to create a warmth, and then I'll move into the room with the person, and it creates like an opening for a person to come in, you know, or say a family who are so uncomfortable that they have to talk a lot, you know, which is totally understandable.
Oh,
like they're afraid of silence, but it's exhausting their loved one, you know, and then music can be a way to be together non-verbally. So there's another example of,
I want to play an excerpt from your work. This is called Slumber. Do you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Oh, this is a lullaby, and I have played it at the bedside, but I would never play it like it's heard on a CD. There are two different ways of playing music. If I'm playing for someone's respiration and it's really slow, it's not going to come out like you hear it on the CD. Plus, you wouldn't have Hank Roberts on cello. So it's just a Stephen Foster lullaby that I just love. And it appears on my own personal CD, Hush. And then it appears again on Beauty Crowds Me, which is the collaboration CD. And it's free to all hospice people on our services, actually.
If you're just joining us, my guest is therapeutic heart practitioner Jane Dumacus. And we're going to listen to a cut from her CD called Slumber. I was wondering about this too. So many people think of harp as tied to spiritual traditions,
right,
and even religious traditions. So how do you feel about that, and how have you navigated?
Yeah, that comes up a lot. you know, I think it was just yesterday someone said, oh, you're an angel. And because they see me coming with a harp and it's just like so stereotyped that way. And, you know, there are reasons for that. It has an effervescent, I don't know if that's the right word, ethereal quality. You know, it can have an ethereal quality. Just the shape of it, you know, the wing-like shape of it, you know, it's a beautiful instrument.
Yeah, it is.
It's a beautiful instrument. But I think the full breadth of harp, and I'm not even considering classical harp, which is not ethereal. It's a you have to be strong and bold. You have to have a lot of musculature to play those. It's not, you know,
just plucking some.
No, it's not dainty or anything. But so the lever harps that we use, they're different. They are lighter. They don't have the same demands. But if you play really softly and tinkly and gently, it can be really annoying. It's not
really.
Yes, people want your full presence, and that means you have to play fully. Even people who are compromised, you know, there's ways to work with people who are compromised that are not about having this little delicate sound, you know. Or sometimes when singing, if I work with singers, you know, and a little, if it's too breathy, you sound like a child. You know, we don't need that. We're adults, and we want to work with the fullness of our human capacity. And that is not an angelic thing. It's a human thing.
Did you think there is a tendency, though, with practitioners like you who work with dying people, to want to be gentle and, you know, not, you know, scare them? Or
in music thanatology, it doesn't really exist. You know, because the whole teaching is about how do you embody the notes that you play. And if it's embodied, if it's embodied, it's going to be full. I can't really say for therapeutic people, because I'm really more immersed in thanatology. But I do mentor some students in therapeutic harp. I have two students I'm mentoring, and I'm teaching a course right now. And anything I do, I would address it. And I have harp students, you know, is that a sound that would be, how would that sound appear to someone? What would that give somebody, that sound?
So you don't mean appear, you mean what it would look like? Or
no, what would the sound that you just made, is it embodied? Does it offer them the fullness of who you are? Or is it you backing up, you know, because you're afraid, and then that gets transmitted?
Yes. Oh, that is really fascinating.
Yeah. So for all my work, whoever I work with, and myself, because I have the same tendency, but show up musically, show up with this note, show up with this person, with this music being the medium.
It's almost like a language. I mean, it is a language.
It is a language.
Yeah.
It is a language.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I want to talk a little bit about the specifics of hospice care in regard to your profession. To tell us, I mean, people are in hospice care. Do they request music, or does somebody suggest it to them? Or I know it's it's a healing art, not a curative.
Right, exactly. It's a healing and not a curative. So all people who come on our services are offered the spectrum of all our services. So the clinical team will say, this is available, this is available, this is available. We have a therapeutic harpist, blah, blah, blah. This is available. You know, I'm in the offerings. And then the clinical team will report. And they do everything. All the extracurriculars. This is the primary nurse. This is the social worker. Yes for this. Yes for this. No for this. And then they go, you know, there's a few things, and I'll just get a yes or a no. Sometimes I'll get, please call. Yes, this patient definitely wants you to come. You know, which is different than, oh sure, you know, because they're getting offered it. Oh, man, you know, man, that would be okay. You know, and some people are like, that would be amazing. Some people are like, no.
Well, you know, some people are probably put off because they're in a clinical setting where they're, you know, in some ways.
Some people, and actually, more often than not, think it's entertainment. And they will say to me, I'm not feeling well today, come another day. And so there's this whole educational piece that has to happen to what really is therapeutic harp, and how can it support them, and how I'm on the clinical team. And if people really become aware of what it can offer them, it can change, you know, that they're not hosting me, they can go to sleep, that it can really work to give them rest if they need it, if they can't sleep, if they have anxiety, if there's a family member in distress, all sorts of things. And that's just an educational piece.
Yeah. I want to share another excerpt from your work. This is called Fantasy. Do you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Fantasy. It's called Fantasy on an English Tune. That also is on both CDs. And again, it's not something you would hear at the bedside this way. First of all, Nicholas Walker is playing with me on his viola da gamba, and we did it many years ago. It was such a wonderful experience with him because I arranged it and he came in and just kind of took off with it. And it's, he's just so wonderful. But I do play this at the bedside. But you can imagine, say someone is breathing, so it's very metered. So you don't always want a meter like that. Someone's got a, music is visceral. And we begin to latch on, our bio selves tend to latch onto a rhythm, right? And you probably know that for yourself if you're at the gym or, you know, marching bands or whatever. Their music is designed to capture people in a certain way or to impact. And it's actually used very intentionally a lot. So this is a very strong meter. So if someone is like breathing like really spaciously, so you're working with the respiratory pattern, and it sometimes it doesn't even sound like the piece. And so this is one of my most loved pieces, and it's a familiar tune. It's like Vaughan Williams used it. It's very similar to Song of the County Down from Ireland. It shows up in church hymnals because it's a melody that is just, it kind of has that, it's both catchy but not in a bad way.
Let's listen to a little bit of it.
Okay, sure.
You know, I love this kind of music. I was thinking that I might not because I was afraid it would remind me of church.
No,
left many years ago.
No.
Now, you also work with elders and people with dementia and Alzheimer's disease. To tell, is that different than working with the guy? Tell us
so
about
different.
It.
It's so different. It's so different. First of all, I want to say that part of my bio is that we have a not-for-profit called Compassion Harp. And it's a not-for-profit under Social Ventures, which is an umbrella to, you know, offer this status for, you know, smaller organizations. And so this work, it's the mission of Compassion Harp is to bring therapeutic harp to people who would benefit but can't afford it.
Great.
And so I go into Cayuga Ridge Skilled Nursing Facility. It's a place where people are, there are a lot of people on Medicaid there. By nature, these particular skilled nursing facilities have little resources, and so people, they do the best they can, but people really can sit there for hours, not being getting, I would say, there's just basic practical attention, you know, hygiene, things like that, and then there's like human attention.
Oh yes, absolutely.
And If we're not mirrored back our humanity, so say some people have Alzheimer's and dementia and no one's interacting with them on a real human level. I mean,
I'm sure that happens often.
It happens often. If I see beautiful aides and stuff there, but they're overwhelmed too, people will really retreat and become really recessed. And there was this wonderful movie, Alive Inside, where it's like, oh my gosh, there's someone in there alive inside. The music evoked a resurfacing, and it's music that people are from their most vital times. So somewhere in their brain, whatever part of the brain that is that stores musical memory, is activated. See, I'm not a neurologist, so I can't really speak for all of you out there who are say, wait a minute, that's not how it works. Yeah. Just bear with me. So, but what happens is people not only remember songs. So there's a number of things. They remember songs. They can sing all the lyrics. They may have not spoken for a really long time, begin to speak. They also access memories related to that song. And they're in relationship to whoever, they begin to be in relationship, say I'm singing in their relationship. This is like a five things I just named. Mm. So we're going from zero to way up there. And it's just the most wonderful thing. And we're bringing Ithaca College students in there through a class that I co-teach with Elizabeth Simkin.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, we bring students in there. We'll have a class in the fall. And then there's a club, Healing Through Musical Companionship. And I just want to flood, right? We've picked Cougar Ridge because, okay, let's pick Cougar Ridge. And I have a relationship with them. There are two more that I could, but I'm just like, let's just flood this place with young people doing music, And they're called musical companions so that there's no confusion. They're not music therapists. They're not paid. They don't have a skill set, so that it respects music therapy, the therapeutic musician, and then this other musical companionship. It's about being a companion, and you use music. That's it.
That's great. We're almost out of time, Jane. I want to know how this has affected you personally. Has it changed your life working with people who are dying and so on?
It's hard to say if it's changed my life or I was already had the kind of disposition, that it was just like the next normal, organic piece of who I would become. I don't know how to answer those questions. My life is definitely, every week I'm at hospice, every week people die, every week people come on, sometimes people I know. And you never really, I could never say I'm ready for death. I'm ready for that person I know. They come on, I'm like, oh no, not. It's not like you're ever ready, but it's not like, oh my gosh, people die, So I have this ongoing inner dialogue. We have outer dialogue with the people we work with and the people we, in hospice, in the community and then working with elders has changed my life. That has changed my life because my exposure to that community was really small and it's opened a whole new world of this beautiful population. And unfortunately, our culture and their place in our culture and that they're not held as wisdom keepers.
Oh, absolutely.
It's,
we have things backwards.
It's backwards. But I'm so glad that we have something, this small thing we can do. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Before we leave, can you give some contact information?
Yes. You can Google me for Ithaca College. You can Google me at HospiCare. You can call HospiCare. Any of those places. I think my email address is at Ithaca College. But here's the best way. Compassion Harp. Go onto the website, compassionharp.org. Actually, explore the website. It's a wonderful website. You'll learn about this beautiful organization. It's just been a total gift in my life. So compassionharp.org, and there's contact information there. I will certainly respond to any questions or curiosities, or if you want to get involved, there are ways to get involved in both HospiCare and in Compassion Harp. There's just a lot of opportunity. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us and talking about this. My guest has been Jane DeMarcus. She is a certified therapeutic harp practitioner, and we're talking about her work in our region. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.